There we are. Okay, a short rundown of dpackage. All you might already be familiar with it, so I'm cutting this short. Packages contain a signature and two tar archives, one with file system data, one with metadata. All of the, and most of the metadata is actually a small bit of control information and maintainer scripts, which are executable. The metadata is also used to resolve dependencies between packages, and the scripts are responsible for setting up anything else that cannot be done with simply dropping a few files. Okay, slightly longer rundown of MSI. Packages contain a signature, of course, and a relational database. The and for each table in the database, there is a plugin in MSI that handles everything that's inside the table. And for a very simple package, you have a table called directory, which creates directories, and a table called file, which tells it which files to install into these directories. There's also a blob table, which contains the actual file contest. The component table contains just one group, all the files, and the validation table, underscore validation table, describes the schema, so you can test whether the archive is still correct. Anything else you need? You need additional tables and additional plugins. A lot of plugins are already provided. You can also have a table of additional plugins that you ship with you, with your package, so you can extend the package manager with the package for just one installation. The plugins do all the user prompting, so if you talk about the directory, then it will just ask where to install this directory. And if you declare more than one component, it will ask you which parts to install. When actually installing the database you provide in the MSI is merged with a base table, which provides the normal installation sequence, which means creating directories, install files, and lots of other things like create registry keys. And you can also add your own actions if you bring your own plugins. So the tables can be merged pretty easily since it's a relational database. Order doesn't matter anyway. If somebody needs sorted information, then they're going to ask for sorted information. They just allow querying the tables via SQL. The default contains the standard stuff. Plugins can provide it with a signed DLL. So you can have plugins provided, for example, by Microsoft, which are automatically trusted by the installer or by some other company, and you do not have to sign the actual plugins yourself. So new features can work on older systems. Preseeding is also implemented by providing additional tables that are used by the plugins that would otherwise ask questions. And you can use tell the installer, for example, to not install the actual package, but just to ask the questions and then add the preseed into the package file. This can be used for automated installation across many systems. Yeah, you just lost the game. The main advantage of dpackage is that all complexity is moved into to package build time. So whenever you have diversions or permissions to be set up or anything, you have to create a script that does that, or you have to have a script that creates the script for you, like Dev Helper. And when installing, no complex handling of any kind is needed. You just unpack the data, run the maintainer script, and it's done. And if you're doing non-standard stuff, you're smaller by magnitudes. The great advantage of MSI is that if you understand all the tables, you know exactly what the package is doing at install time, and you also get rollback and conflict management for everything. For example, dpackage doesn't handle conflicts between diversions, and you can actually statically find out these two packages are going to conflict on diversions or something like that. And you also have separate signatures, so you can have stuff that users already trust. Thank you. 1 second left. I think it was 1 second left. Or?
Something like that.
I gave you an extra minute. Okay. The second lightning talk I have is a bit shorter because I wrote it just before coming here. It's about MMULess systems and how to handle them, because in mDebian we are probably going to support some of them and want to compile standard Debian packages for these systems, and we might have interesting patches that you might not understand otherwise. The problem with being MMULess is you do not have virtual addresses. You do not have separate address spaces between processes. All processes and the kernel live in the same address space. So there is a very primitive implementation of the dmessage program, for example, that just looks into kernel memory rather than asking the kernel, because it's a buffer that lives at a fixed address. You can just read it. If you have broken pointers, you hit any process, not necessarily your own. So if any process crashes, it might not be at fault, actually. And you might get to access hardware directly or not. That depends on the actual system. Some have an additional protection layer. And the worst thing of all, there is no swap space. The POSIX functionality works fine for the most part. The only things that don't are fork and break. Fork is obvious, and break just shifts around the pointer with the end of the current process's address space, which doesn't make sense if all processes have the same address space. Biggest problem, glibc uses break to allocate memory. So glibc doesn't run on MMULess systems. And memory is allocated on MMULess systems by just memmapping dev0 in a private mapping. Or just asking for anonymous memory, which is essentially the same. glibc also does this for large mappings, like megabytes or greater, and small stuff is allocated in the via break. Also, memory gets fragmented between processes, since all the processes are allocating memory, freeing memory all the time. And so you might end up with 8 megabytes of free memory, but only 2 megabyte chunks or something like that. And if anybody asks for more, then the allocation is going to fail. This is a huge problem, so you should be very careful when allocating memory and try to allocate big chunks, but not too big chunks, so you don't steal memory from the other processes. And basically, you should do a bit of your own memory management. Memmap semantics also change slightly. You cannot have read-write shared mappings of files, so any file you map for writing must be mapped exclusively to your process, and any file but you can have shared read-only mappings. Mapping costs unswappable memory because there is no swap, and writable shared mappings are only written when they are unmapped or synced. So and implicitly at process exit. So you should at some point unmap or sync or something in order to get the disk to get stuff out to disk, because otherwise your process might hang around in zombie state for like 10 seconds while it's still writing data. The biggest problem with not forking is the solution for not using fork, because it doesn't exist, would be use vfork if you're running another process. That does just the same, basically. Only it doesn't spawn a new address space for the new process, but reuses your own and suspends the original process for until the child process sets up its own address space, its own names. Its own space. This is also gives you a slight advantage on regular Linux, because you don't have to copy all the tables. Daemonizing works needs vfork and exec, which is a pretty expensive operation. So it's generally a good idea to use start-stop daemon to daemonize rather than telling the daemon to do it. Splitting a process doesn't work. So SSH with privilege separation doesn't work, for example. And dpackage might also have problems with the new gzip implementation. Double fork to disassociate parent doesn't work at all either. So don't do it. Even if all the people tell you this is the only way to properly disassociate a process from a parent, and this, all your daemon programmers should do this. Okay. Summary: use vfork, don't use break, don't use fork, allocate memory in large chunks to keep fragmentation low. Thank you.